This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to The Urologist Speaks. My name is Dr. Graham Cates. I'm going to be your host for this evening.
Excuse me. Dr. Pinto is out and about. Sorry about that. Trying to drink water and speak is not a good plan. So tonight, Dr. Alyssa Knowles Adderley is joining me. Dr. Knowles Adderley is a foot and ankle surgeon who works along with us at Family Medicine Center on Blake Road, and she also has other clinical practices as well. So tonight, what we're going to be talking about is the foot and ankle, some of the common conditions that affect it, some of the reasons why it's important for us to actually look after our feet. Often we take these things for granted, but every day we use our feet to get around, to move about, and they are very, very important. I'm reminded of the biblical stories of that every part of the body has a role, the eye, the ears, the hands, and tonight is the feet. So just by way of introduction, I'll let Dr. Alyssa Knowles just tell us a little bit about herself, and where you're from, and how long have you been back home in this beautiful Bahamas?
Hi, everyone. I am Dr. Alyssa Knowles Adderley, and I have been back home. This is about 4 years now.
Awesome. And welcome back. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's been so wonderful. I feel settled. I feel very involved in the community now. I feel like I'm a part of the medical community at this point. But yes, I am a podiatric physician, foot and ankle surgeon, here in the Bahamas. I've been practicing for, I want to say, 16 years now.
Amazing.
I did the first 10 and change over in the U.S., and then I returned home with my family.
Beautiful. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
So when we talk about podiatry, first of all, let's just sort of define what it is that, you know, podiatry is, because a lot of people may not even know what podiatry is.
Right. So podiatry means anything foot and ankle. Technically below the knee, below the tibialis anterior, below that down. And that is podiatry. So whatever is related, whether it's bone, soft tissue, ingrown nails, heel pain, all of that, it falls under podiatry.
The full spectrum. And podiatry is a clinical specialty where you're caring for the feet, but you also have the opportunity to do surgical interventions if necessary as well, right?
Exactly. Our goal obviously is prevention. So you want to be seen regularly so we don't have to then get to that surgical point. But then there are some conditions that require surgery immediately, and we're here to handle all of that.
Amazing. So wonderful to have you here tonight. So when we talk about foot and ankle health, you know, first of all, why is it important? Why should we be concerned about our feet and our ankles?
So like you mentioned before, the feet, they carry you around. And sometimes, not sometimes, a lot of the times, it's one of the most neglected areas in our body. We don't consider it until, oh, all of a sudden we have pain, we're unable to walk, and then you realize how important your feet are to just the way you function in life. So it's our duty as podiatrists, as foot and ankle specialists, to make sure you're able to prevent all of those conditions that may occur or that can occur, and to allow you to be able to function as best as possible for a very long time.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure that everybody's listening here. I mean, you know what it's like if you buck your toe, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is doggone sore and it hurts.
Exactly.
And so, you know, when you have a problem with your feet, it really does limit your mobility. It limits your ability to be able to work. It has such long-term impacts on your overall health and well-being. And as a part of our overall way that we look after ourselves, we have to look after the whole body. And tonight, we want to just spend some time talking to you about the importance of foot care.
Exactly.
So most people, as you said, don't look after their feet. You mm-hmm. know, they just sort of go about their normal day-to-day activities. We spend time caring for our hair mm-hmm. and putting on our makeup and making sure that
sure.
we're dressed
yes.
and everything.
Yes.
So what does it look like for normal foot care? Like, what are some of the things that we should be doing to help to look after our feet on a day-to-day basis? Just normal people, no underlying chronic illnesses, just regular John Doe.
Absolutely. So the first thing I tell patients is just to pay attention. Pay attention to your feet before it becomes painful, before there's a problem. And what that looks like is making sure you're in the right shoes, making sure you actually look at your feet every day and you just observe for any cuts, making sure they heal in appropriate time. And also just, again, with the shoes, you want to wear the shoe that's right for your foot. Everybody has a different foot type and you need to make sure it's focused on you, so the right shoe for you.
And boy, we have some shoes. I mean, we got all kinds of things out there that I see people are wearing on a day-to-day basis.
Yes,
that I don't
sure.
know how they get their feet in there, but they certainly do. So when you talk about appropriate footwear, mm-hmm. Are there some general guidelines that people should look towards when they are purchasing footwear? And also, if a lot of people just walk around barefoot, mm-hmm. indoors or outdoors. What are your thoughts on that? So two-part question. One is the footwear. Mm-hmm. How do we say, yes, this is good for my foot? And two is, what are your thoughts about just barefootedness?
So, you know, in just to put it simply, so what I mostly tell patients regarding footwear, you want to look for a shoe that has a decent sole. You have enough heel or enough sole toward the heel. You need that for shock absorption so that you're not putting too much pressure or allowing the back and the knees and the hips to take the brunt of it. So the sole is important. The toe box is important. A wider toe box will always be more beneficial.
That's the front of the shoe.
That's the front of the shoe.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That will always be more beneficial. You want a little bit of flex at the level of the toe, obviously, so you can get that heel-to-toe gait when you're walking. But you do not want a lot of flex in the middle of the shoe. And that is where a lot of people fall. They end up wearing these flip-flops that just can fold, can roll into a ball, can fold in half, and it's just never good. It just puts a lot of stress on the foot and ankle joints.
Yeah, and so when we talk about footwear just in general day-to-day, we have, in my mind, a couple of boxes. One is, you know, professionals that are going to work, and mm-hmm. they're going to be wearing sort of those types of shoes. And then we also have the footwear that we want to wear when we're exercising. Are there
right.
certain things that we should be looking for in footwear when we're exercising, running or walking or other activities that we're doing?
Yes. Yeah, so regarding exercise, regarding tennis shoes or sneakers, again, a thicker sole would be best because, again, if you're doing running, you're doing jumping, it just allows for much more shock absorption. You do not want the one that folds in half. And then another pointer I tend to make to my patients is I like a mesh top and not like the leather type tops
okay.
at the sneakers, because it just allows for some expansion. If you end up with a little bit of swelling, it prevents a lot more friction at the toes, less chance for like the callus formation on the tops of the toes. So I prefer a mesh top sneaker.
And what about the care of the foot? You mentioned about looking at the foot, seeing if there's any cuts, abrasions, those types of things. What about the nail care? What should people be doing in terms of looking after the nails? I mean, and a lot of people go to salons where mm-hmm. they may get a pedicure, but just for the general person, what are the type of things that we should be doing related to our nail care?
So you just want to make sure you cut them straight across and you not too low, but low enough where it's just where the nail meets the end of the flesh. You don't want it to protrude over because impingement on that can cause or trigger ingrowns, can just cause a bit more contusion or bruising under the nail if it's too long. You also want to just keep the skin very moisturized. Dry skin causes more friction, allows for more openings, more wounds, whether you're diabetic or not. And then when moisturizing, you want to make sure you're just moisturizing the skin, the top, the bottom, not in between the toes, because those areas tend to be a bit more moist in general. So that if you create too much moisture, then you are harboring or giving a good environment for fungus to happen.
Right, which is a common condition.
Which is a common
condition.
We'll talk
about some of those common conditions as we go along. What about kids? You know, we go, I'm blessed to have two young men on my hands now. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it, how fast it's gone by.
Right.
But with kids, you know, we go, we take them to the store and we say, oh, those shoes look good. And we just throw them on their feet. And what considerations should parents be giving and buying shoes for their kids?
You know, so this goes back to barefoot walking. Mm. So if you start from when a toddler is just starting to walk, barefoot is actually best for them. They're able to feel, they're able to balance more. The shoes don't put much weight on them. And most of the toddlers, I see a lot of parents, they do come in concerned about their toddler being flat-footed.
Yes.
And that's normal structure for a toddler because the bones aren't really there yet. There's just little specks of the bones. Eventually it kind of develops over the years. But a two-year-old, you're just going to see just a few little dots on an x-ray, not much to talk about. The bones are still developing and still taking structure. So we cannot put too much emphasis on the toddler being flat-footed because it's not even fully developed yet. So that's good. So you see that kind of flapping around, and that's okay. That's their way of just learning to walk, learning to balance, and that's good for them during that moment.
So just let them be.
Let them
run around barefoot. No
yes.
need to keep them in shoes all the time.
Yes. I'm not saying put them on the hard street barefoot all the time, but around
course,
the house,
yeah.
you know, yes, that's better for them.
Right.
And then regarding shoes, something with, you want the sole, of course, to have, be a little bit more rigid for when they're walking outside. But I like, because they're not developed that great yet, a softer shoe, nothing that's going to be too constrictive and hard on them and manipulate their foot before it's time.
Yes. Very, very mm-hmm. valuable information. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the common conditions that you would see in your area of specialty, which is podiatry,
mm-hmm.
Related to some common things in the foot. And so one of the things that I see often in clinical practice, general practice, which I'm a family physician, is you know, corns
mm-hmm.
or calluses that are building up on the foot.
Yes.
So why are these so common? And what are some of the things that we can do to prevent them and also treat them?
Okay, so corns and calluses, anytime you have a callus buildup, that is your body's way of trying to protect itself. So what does that mean? It means it felt a lot more pressure in that certain area, whether it was on top of the toes, whether it was at the bottom of the foot, the forefoot. That's your body's way of saying there's bony pressure felt in that area for whatever reason, whether it's the shoes that you were wearing or you're consistently wearing, whether it's the foot type you have and the way you're walking that's causing a lot more impingement on a certain area. But it's basically the body's way of saying, okay, we're feeling more pressure here. We need to build more tissue in this area because we have to protect this bone before it ends up being exposed.
So corns and calluses are not normal. They shouldn't be there.
They are not normal. That means that something is going on and we need to figure out what's the reason why it's happening and try to get to a point where we can eliminate it or at least reduce it.
Right. And so what are some of the things that are generally done in helping to manage people that may be having corns? Sometimes they can be painful, they can get infected at times. So what are some of the general things that you're doing in your specialty area?
Well, the number one thing we do is find out the reason for it. What is the cause and how do we eliminate that? But most times we just need to offload. So whether it's at the bottom, we have to offload that area, take off the bony pressure, and that should make it subside. We debride it, meaning that we shave it down, but it will build up if you're not addressing the reason why it's happening to begin with. Address the shoes. We look at the shoes. What are you wearing? Is this enough? Do you need more support? Do you need custom insoles to help offload this certain area? Do you need surgery to remove this bone? It's contracted a bit, so therefore, no matter what you do, you're going to feel pressure in that area. So we may have to do a surgical procedure to fix that bone and the way it's positioned, and that way it alleviates that pressure in that area, therefore alleviating the corn itself.
So no need to suffer with corns.
No, at least find out the reason and see if you're willing to seek treatment.
See your podiatrist and have your feet assessed if you have corns.
Yes.
You can see Dr. Alyssa Knowles at Family Medicine Center, 70293. You can also check us out on our website. We'd be happy to see you. Now, one of the things that you mentioned about the foot and the distribution of the weight is about insoles.
Yes.
And I know there's a lot of technology now available to help with this. One time ago, it was very cumbersome
to get in. So, and that's how I was trained that way. And I was like, how do you do this in practice? And we did it a few times in clinic. And that whole process took like an hour, just the process of just getting the plaster on the patient, letting it dry. That patient's in office for a very long time, and then you manipulate it off of the foot. You mail that out to a company that's going to develop it. It's a whole process. But now it's super seamless, and there's very little room for error when it comes to this. Right now we do a 3D scan. It's a device just connected to the iPad. We take a 3D scan of your foot, and it's custom made for you. That's electronically sent to the lab. You sit and mail it back, and we give it to the patient. It's super easy.
Amazing technology. Mm-hmm. And that just fits into your regular shoe.
You
put it in and you wear it, and it provides you with that support and the redistribution of weight on the foot.
And men do really well with custom orthotics because they have more shoes that accommodate them well versus women, you know, not so much the high heels, not so much the very narrow shoes. But the women who, in your sneakers, great. And your loafers, great. But a lot of my male patients, they do extremely well. And they just come in every year and get their new pair of orthotics.
Okay. And is that how frequently people have to change them? Or does it vary dependent on the use of the orthotic?
With orthotics, because they're so beneficial for patients, insurances cover their orthotics. And they cover them at 100%, providing you meet all of the standard deductibles and stuff. So with that, yes, because it prevents a lot more issues, they are more keen to provide that service for their clients. And every year, you're entitled to a new pair.
Amazing. Very, very good information. Mm-hmm. So, get your feet checked out. Make sure that everything is okay. And if you are having pain or discomfort in the foot, make sure that you see your podiatrist so that you can get your inserts, if that's what is recommended.
Yes.
The next area that I want us to just focus in on is foot infections. So one of the things that I commonly see in clinical practice is fungal infections of the foot.
Mm-hmm.
And these can be on the skin. They can be between the toes.
Yes.
I see quite a lot of patients that come in and say, I just have dry feet.
Right.
And they don't even know that the condition that they're actually experiencing is a fungal infection.
Right.
So when we look at the feet in terms of fungal infections, what are some of the things that people should be looking out for? And also some of the treatment options that are available for foot fungal infections.
Yeah, so the fungal infections at the bottom of the foot, it looks like scaling, like dryness. It looks I have super dry, like you said, super dry feet. And it's just no matter how much lotion or Vaseline.
I see that one all the time. Oh, I've been putting Vaseline on my foot every day.
And it's not going away. So at that point, it's worth having your podiatrist look at it. Sometimes a biopsy may be warranted because it doesn't look, it's not sometimes just very easy to see or to notice. Sometimes it does just look dry. But most fungal infections of the bottom of the foot, it has like that scale, has a specific look. And there are treatments. There is as easy as getting a topical prescribed, and you can get rid of it. That one is kind of easier to treat. The nail is a little bit more difficult, a little bit challenging. Because what
tends to... So what does that look like when you're looking at your nails and you're seeing the, but with some of the things that you would expect to see in a fungal infection of the nail?
Thick, discolored. You have the kind of a yellowing appearance, and then sometimes you have that flaking underneath. But
almost like cracking.
Almost like cracking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. However, and what tends to happen as well is that some people do come in and say, I have fungus in my nail. And then I look at it, and yes, I can see where you think it's a fungus, but sometimes when you have previous damage to the nail, it just grows back incorrectly, mimicking the appearance of a fungus. Mm-hmm. So how we, before I put any patient on a regimen for nails, I always like to get a biopsy of the nail to confirm before we're starting a whole treatment plan, and it's not even fungus to begin with.
Right, and so when you're talking about a biopsy, that's just taking a little clipping
just
of the nail,
just a little
nail,
clipping
right?
of the nail, send it off to the lab. They let us know in about 2 weeks, and then we can decide on how best to proceed.
Right, and so what are the common treatments that are used for fungal nail infections?
Yeah, so we have topical options where you just use like a nail lacquer and you paint it every day. And then you have oral options where you take a pill and that works. That works really well, but it is kind of hard on your liver. So we make sure the patient is a good candidate for the oral options. We always get blood work before to check your liver panel, making sure that's in good shape before we even begin. And while you're on the regimen, you get your blood work done every month and make sure there are no changes.
Right. And, you know, people are often asking about natural ways of being able to treat infections. Are there any naturopathic things that you're aware of that are used for fungal skin infections or nail infections? I don't know any, but
so
I'm
the
just
fungal,
asking.
So the fungal nail infection, no, I'm not. I know you see my face. No, I don't see any works well. Reason being is that fungus is one of those things very hard to get rid of, and you have to be so consistent with it. So using the antifungal, it doesn't even get rid of what's already there. Mm. It just prevents the new nail from being affected with the fungus. So you can't just do one regimen this week and then expect it to just not show up.
Right.
So that's why when you're doing even the topical antifungals, sometimes it takes a very long time, because if you stop one day, sometimes you're basically starting over, because you're allowing the fungus to then just still affect the new nail growing, that's growing.
So in other words, people, see the doctor, let your podiatrist help
yes.
you to get rid of those fungal infections
yes,
on the
for
feet.
Sure.
Don't ignore them either, because then you can get complications associated with infections of the foot. So definitely not something that you want to ignore. I see that we do have a call that's coming in. So we'll go ahead and take that call. I'll let you go ahead and ask your questions. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Dr. Kate.
Hi, yes. We are wonderful, thank you.
Good. My first time hearing you on the show.
I am filling in for my good friend, Dr. Pinto, so it's good to be here.
Man. I love to hear you more often. Anyway.
Thank you. That's a good word you're putting in for me.
My question is, not even my question, I sometime experienced my toenails. My big toenail and one of my other toenails, they tend to get dry under there and they fall off.
Okay.
What is causing that? And as a woman, you know, I love to wear my sandals, so I have to go and get my nails done and have them put on a toenail, because, you know, without having a toenail on top of it, it looks pretty bad.
Sure, mm-hmm. Of course, yes. And you want those feet to be nice and beautiful.
Yeah, but I still want to get to the bottom of why my toenails keep falling off.
So there's a few things, and that's what I was telling Dr. Cates.
I'm going to hang up so I can hear you better.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you. Thank you for your call and for the question. So I'll let Dr. Knowles Adderley address it.
Yeah, so this is exactly what I was talking about, where you want to make sure you know exactly what you're treating. Was there any trauma to her nail before that made it so that that nail bed can no longer support a nail? Sometimes that just happens where, you know, you're no longer able to support it. So the nail is growing out, but it's not adhering well to the nail bed, because it might have been prior trauma before. So that's when we take the biopsy. We kind of see if there's fungus, And if that's ruled out, then we know that it's more than likely either one of two things, either previous trauma to the nail where the nail bed is just not functioning well, or just we might be lack of vitamins. You know, you want to make sure you're taking your hair, skin, nails, vitamins.
So, you know, you need to be assessed. We really thank you for calling in, but it definitely is something that needs to be looked at. There are a couple of reasons why it can happen, and you can get in touch with Dr. Knowles Adderley at Family Medicine Center, 702-9310, or you can check out our website, familymedicinecenter.org, and set up an appointment. So, talking about other things that can affect the foot, one of the common things, which is a chronic non-communicable condition that we see on a regular basis, is going to be diabetes. And after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about some medical conditions that affect the foot.
Yes, okay.
Thank you for listening.
No budget for a vacation this summer? No worries. We got you. Guardian Radio 96.9 will fly you and a guest to South Florida for a vacation of a lifetime. Our sweet summer escape gets you round-trip tickets on Bahamas Air. $1,000 spending cash, thanks to Percy's Island Games. Brand new luggage from Brass and Leather. 4 days and three nights at the beautiful Holiday Inn Express Plantation. Free car rental from Hertz, too. All you need is your passport. We got you covered. Enter now for the Guardian Radio 96.9 Sweet Summer Escape. Fill out the form in today's Nassau Guardian and follow us on all social media platforms. Remember, you must be 18 or older to enter. Drawing August 14th. Taxes not included and certain restrictions.
Always on the go? Missed a show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by the show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Guess who's back?
It's the time again for the 31st annual Michael Scudery Peace on the Streets Basketball Classic.
Classic. Bring it on now, let's go.
Whether you're a player or a fan, you don't want to miss this one. The action starts July 13th at the Hope Center. Log on to peaceonthestreets.com and register.
Come on, everybody, let's go!
That's the Peace on the Streets Basketball Classic.
Where we shoot hoops instead of guns.
Game time.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Yes, good evening, everyone. The Urologist Speaks. I'm Dr. Graham Cates. Your family physician is speaking tonight on behalf of Dr. Greg Pinto. Thank you for joining us. Tonight, we have a special guest in the house, Dr. Alyssa Knowles Adderley, who is a foot and ankle surgeon, a podiatrist, which really looks after everything from the ankle down. And so we've had an opportunity to talk about some common things that we should be doing to look after our feet in the first half of the segment. And now we want to talk about some chronic conditions that can affect the feet. And again, as a family physician, in my day-to-day practice, one of the things that I commonly have to deal with is persons with diabetes. And so diabetes is a very common medical condition. I'm sure that persons that are listening tonight know somebody or maybe even impacted by diabetes. And diabetes, I tell my patients all the time, affects from the top of your head to the very bottom of your feet. There's nothing that is spared in patients who have diabetes. And protecting yourself from the effects of diabetes is so important by controlling your blood sugars having good lifestyle activities, and of course, your feet are such an important part of prevention in diabetes, and that's what we want to talk a little bit about. So why are the feet of diabetics so prone to possibly having issues compared to other persons that are not diabetic?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research, and what one of the most pronounced reasons they found is the fact that when there's excess sugar in your circulating in your blood, it just wants to find places to go. Mm. After it goes where it's supposed to go, it's just circulating, there's excess, and it just wants to find places to go. And one of the first places it goes is the nerves on the feet.
Wow.
Yeah. Feet, hands, eyes, kidneys. But one of the most common places, one of the very first places, is the feet. So a lot of times I would see a patient or even establish the fact that they're a diabetic before they even know they're a diabetic, because they're just coming with a foot concern.
Right.
And then we're doing the full workup, and, you know, it requires a little bit more than just a foot workup. But diabetes is one of those things where it's the problem with with diabetes and the way it affects the foot is that once it gets to the point where it binds onto the nerve, makes the nerve not function well, then you lose that protective sensation. And that's the starting point for everything going downhill. Once that protective sensation is lost, and what do I mean by that? When you have good nerve health, the function of nerves is to tell you something's hot, something's cold, something's sharp. Mm-hmm. It just lets you know that something's... And you, when you lose that, you're not able to protect yourself. So then you have to tell yourself that, okay, my feet are not letting me know. I'm not getting that signal that something's hurting me. I have to constantly look down and make sure thing that's the problem.
Yeah, and that nerve damage that people experience is something which is called neuropathy.
Yes.
And that neuropathy affects that sensation, our ability to be able to feel. And in diabetics, we describe it as something which is called the glove and stocking distribution of neuropathy. You know, this is something that happens in persons who have uncontrolled diabetes in general. If you're looking after your blood sugars, this is not typically something that's going to happen. So managing your blood sugar is important.
Mm-hmm.
But as a diabetic, what should persons be looking for, and how often should they be having their feet assessed?
Okay, so I like prevention. Prevention is number one. I tell all my diabetics, don't wait until something is bothering you or you look down and you see blood. Don't wait until that happens before you come in. I should be seeing you, especially if your blood sugars are not the most controlled. I should be seeing you every 3 months. If they're more controlled, then those patients I see every 6 months, or sometimes when you're really good, I see you when you do your physical.
That's really good.
That's really good. When you're
One in a million.
Yes. Then I see you annually when you do your full physical and just include me with that, and we're good. But the average diabetic patient I see every 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a part of your assessment, when you're seeing a diabetic patient, what are some of the things that you would be looking for and testing for?
Yeah. So if you're coming in as a diabetic, but you don't really have any major foot concerns, I just want to make sure your sensation is still within intact. I want to make sure you still have good circulation. I can feel your pulses. I can hear your pulses. And just look for any potential risk factors so that I can put it on your mind to look down to make sure this doesn't become a problem in the future.
And one of the things that we were talking about early is the importance of looking at your feet.
Right.
For diabetics, this is really even more critical.
Exactly. So everybody should be looking at their feet, paying attention to their feet. But a diabetic, you have to take that up times 10. You always look down, check in between. Look at the bottoms. Just because you don't feel anything doesn't mean that something's not there or is enough concern. And if you can't do it yourself, if you have a problem looking at the bottom of your foot or unable to do it, you have to have a family member, someone to support you to just, you know, every evening, just take a quick glance and make sure there's nothing going on.
And then the other part that goes along with that is not just checking the feet, but checking the shoes.
Yes. You know what tends to happen too? Sometimes they don't even see it on their foot. They just look back and see a trail of blood on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Or they say, I went to put these shoes on and I saw some blood in there, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you have that neuropathy where you're not feeling it, mm-hmm. you may have something as simple as a little small stone inside of your shoe.
Right.
And before you know it, by the end of the day, there's breakdown of the skin.
There you go.
There's the issue associated with the breakdown of the skin that can cause long-term complications.
Exactly.
And so we want you to prevent that from happening in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so checking your feet, seeing your podiatrist, wearing good footwear. Now, if you do have an issue with the foot, say, for example, the diabetic comes in and they may have some infection or they may have the beginning of an ulcer, those are important things that we want to aggressively treat.
Yes, for sure. And those are things we do not take for granted in diabetics, because day one, it could look like a small opening. And by day two, three, we have an active infection that needs to be treated in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to wait until it's that. You want to be seen as soon as possible. Let's deal with it and avoid the hospitalization.
So why I hear one of the things that people do all the time, and I just had a patient in this week who is a diabetic, a new patient to our clinical services at Family Medicine Center, who is soaking their feet every day in warm water. What are your thoughts for persons with diabetes soaking their feet?
So it depends. Again, it all depends. If you're a controlled diabetic and warm, that's another something to always make sure, because I do have my patients who think they're stepping into warm water and it's hot and they didn't realize
because
until
they can't feel it.
They can't feel it, and yes. Then their feet are blistered, and then they walk in and they said, I guess the water was too hot.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make sure, always temperature check your water before you do that. If you're soaking and you have an open wound, I don't recommend that. If you're soaking just because you had a long day and your feet are otherwise good, healthy, in good shape, good standing, you know, I'm okay with it. But on your particular foot, and what's the reason for your soaking?
Right. And so one size doesn't fit all.
Exactly.
So, you know, again, this is why it's important to see your podiatrist, get the necessary advice from your healthcare provider so you know what is best for you.
Right.
Now, in the diabetic that then does subsequently develop a complication such as an infection or such as an ulcer, you know, all is not lost. There are lots of things that we can do in medicine. You mentioned about surgical treatments that are available where those wounds can be cleaned up. There are medications that we can use. There are certain preparations that are available. And there's been great advancements in wound care over the last 10 years.
Yeah, for sure. But the main thing with an active infection is that you want to drain and get rid of as much of the infection as possible. Instead of just relying solely on, say, antibiotics. So you want to come in and just get it cleaned out really well. Allow me to take a look and make sure there's nothing I can do to drain it more, because you just want, you want to prevent further spreading.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. You want to control the infection, keep it where it is, and decrease as opposed to it spreading and getting worse.
And the primary objective here is treating it so that people do not end up with amputations.
Exactly. So limb salvage is a huge thing. So that's our main goal. We want to make sure prevent any potential reasons for amputation. We want to make sure we address everything as quickly as possible to avoid any potential limb loss.
Yeah. So protecting your feet, protecting the foot from any potential damage if you are diabetic is really important. Blood sugar control, making sure that you're compliant with your healthcare's recommendations in terms of controlling your blood sugars, and of course, making sure that you are getting your feet assessed regularly and you are looking after your feet on a regular basis.
Yes.
One of the other things that we often see as people get a little older is arthritis.
Yeah,
and
that's
there
common.
Are different types of arthritis, but one of the common arthritis is osteoarthritis.
Right.
And so let's talk a little bit about, well, one, why do you get, you know, arthritis? People get arthritis all the time. And two, what are some of the things that we can do to help to manage it?
Yeah, so arthritis is one of those things where that's just a complication within joints, right? And in our feet, we have like 30 joints within the feet itself.
It's amazing.
Right?
Exactly.
So, and then these feet are then taking on the weight of your entire body. So over time, it eventually develops. You have wearing down of the cartilage within those joints. You end up with some osteophytes or spur formations at the level of those joints. And you want to make sure you know exactly where it stands, how aggressive the arthritis is. Is it something that we can just treat with maybe anti-inflammatories, accommodative shoe gear? If maybe an injection can help alleviate some of the discomfort, it's, you know, a temporary fix, but it does work. And then sometimes surgical intervention is a possibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So arthritis is osteoarthritis in particular, what we're talking about, is a very common condition. Mm-hmm. Most people are going to be affected by it at some point in their lives.
Exactly.
And one of the places that commonly occurs is the feet. The other condition that I see very often in clinical practice is gout.
Oh, yeah.
Where patients come in with a swollen toe and they think they may have hit the toe, or they may think there's some other problem associated with it. So what is gout and why do we develop it, and how do we prevent it?
Yeah, so our diet here is specifically in the Bahamas just
yes.
makes it so easy to develop gout. Gout is when you have a buildup of uric acid level, and it kind of breaks down into these purines and causes all of this, an acute attack within a certain joint. Most often it's the great toe joint, the big toe joint, the ankle joint as well is commonly affected. Those are the two most common places on the foot itself. But the diet specifically, that is where we fall victim. Even as simple as just excessive tuna and grits every morning, that is the tuna fish. It
yes.
will do it to you.
Yes.
The bears, of course, we know, you know, steak is or red meat in general is one of those things. But the shellfish, yeah, the shellfish.
All contributing factors.
Yeah. Potentially developing gout.
So, you know, typically these patients that we're going to see come in with these painful, swollen joints, usually, like you said, of the big toe or mm-hmm. of the ankle. And it's very painful. For some of you that have had gout, or you know somebody that has had gout, it is a very painful condition.
Exactly.
And so in terms of its treatment, it's looking at treating the acute symptoms, but also looking
right.
at the prevention side of it as well.
Yes. So in that moment, they don't want to hear anything about their diet. They just
for
need
sure.
they need some pain relief. Gout is one of those things that make you feel like you had a severe injury. Oh, I was playing. I think I broke something.
That's
I
right.
had to, you know,
Gotta
they always
do an
come
X-ray.
In. Yes, they always come in with something has to be broken. This
That's
cannot
right.
be, you know. It's never one of those things where it feels a little achy. No, it's never dull. It's always super painful. Cannot walk on it. Cannot put pressure. In terms of in that moment, we just work on getting you out of pain. So sometimes that entails where we just give you some pills to reduce that inflammation. Oftentimes it might even entail just an injection there mm-hmm. just to reduce the inflammation significantly. So you have that immediate pain relief. And then we get your blood work. We see what your uric acid levels are. We talk about dietary changes that might have to happen so we can get those down. You might have to be on something long-term to help, depending on what your uric acid level is. Might have to be on a long-term regimen to get those levels down to prevent another acute attack.
Yeah, and other than the diet, there's also particular medications that mm-hmm. some people may be taking, such as blood pressure medications, a certain class
right.
of medications, which are diuretics
yes.
that are commonly prescribed, and they work very well. And this is only a very small group of people that may be impacted by it, but as a part of your assessment, that's part of your history, we would ask you about medications that you may be taking. It could be also precipitating factors of gout and, of
yes.
course, changing those if it's necessary to be able to change it. I think one of the big take-home messages for me about gout, and I always speak with my patients about this, is that you don't have to suffer with gout.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're having a flare-up of gout, see your doctor.
Amen.
And if you're having one or two flare-ups in a 12-month period of time, then just look at some preventative
exactly.
measures.
Exactly. Just look at some
lifestyle changes.
Diet
and other medications that can be used to help to get rid of that excessive uric acid inside of the bloodstream.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And so when we move up the foot a little bit into the ankle, common musculoskeletal things are going to be injuries to the ankle. you know, sports-related injuries or walking-related injuries? What are some of those common things that you would see in clinical practice?
So, you know, you have your ankle sprains. That's one of the most common injuries, just twisting of the ankle, ended up with a sprain, and you have that blown version of an ankle where it's, you know, sometimes it's less painful to have broken the bone itself than to just have sprained.
Like you got a kamali on the side of your leg, right? A kamoli on the side of your leg. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and then once you have a history of an ankle sprain, one of the most frequent causes of ankle sprain is a prior history of ankle sprain. So once you had one, it makes it so that the ligament is in a more stretched position. There's laxity there. Sometimes the what we call proprioceptive, where you twist and you need to get back into alignment, and sometimes you lose that proprioception. So it's important to be evaluated, get some physical therapy, get retrained those tendons, those ligaments, those nerve endings to respond appropriately for ankle sprains. You know, you don't just sit around and just let it be.
And I think a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just ignore those initial injuries and they end up with long-term recurrent injuries
exactly.
because they're not proactive. And one of the things that you mentioned, Dr. Knowles Adderley, is about physical therapy and
yes.
the role of physical therapy in that rehabilitation process.
Exactly.
Helping to strengthen the muscles, helping to restore that proprioception of position and
exactly.
location of where the ankle is in space. And that helps to prevent those persons from developing recurrent injuries.
Exactly.
I had a very interesting patient come in a couple of weeks ago with pain in the back of their heel area
yes.
where their Achilles is.
Mm-hmm. That is common.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that because that was a very interesting patient that came in having chronic pain inside of the Achilles area.
So that is common and that is very painful. And it's different than a lot of people have what we call plantar fasciitis, which mm-hmm. is pain at the bottom of the heel. But the pain toward the back of the heel is a little bit different. It stems not just the heel itself, but it stems from your calf muscle. So the calf muscle, you have two major heads and all of that, the tendons that attach to those, the tendons that come from those muscle bellies that attach to the bone, they intertwine, they form one large tendon called your Achilles tendon. And the Achilles tendon attaches right at the back of the heel.
That's like that big piece of string right
exactly.
in the back of the leg there. Yeah.
Exactly. So you referenced the Bible. They talk about your Achilles heel in the Bible. This is one of those things where if it is hurting, if it's giving you issues, it makes it so limiting for you to function. So in the back of the heel, if you're having that pulling of your Achilles tendon where it inserts on the bone, eventually it can create a large spur. And it causes that area to be inflamed. And then behind that spur, you can develop a bursa. A bursa meaning just a collection of fluid, and that can become really painful as well. So this is where prevention takes place. You want to come in, you want to be seen, you want to be evaluated, get your x-rays. If it's an early phase, we can work on the physical therapy, mm-hmm. your stretching. The goal is to make sure your calf muscle is nice and loose
right.
because it releases the Achilles and also releases the plantar fascia and makes it so they're not pulling so tightly on the bone, causing that inflammatory process. Now, if it gets to a point where it's, you know, significantly advanced, then we're looking at surgical intervention to kind of resect the spur, position the Achilles in a better position, loosen things up in that area, and that's a long recovery. But people do really well by it. People do really well by the surgery.
Yeah, and these conditions can predispose to rupture of the Achilles.
There you go.
Where people
yeah.
will actually have a tear of the Achilles, and that is definitely something that requires surgery.
Yes, yes, and that happens a lot in your 40-some, 50-some-year-old men who have, you know, they haven't stretched and they don't know how long, and then they go on the basketball court and decide, I'm going to go pick up with some 20-some-year-olds. And, you know, they say, oh, somebody kicked me in the back of my leg.
Yes, that popping sensation
yes.
that they feel.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. So one of the other things that is common, and you mentioned it already, that I wanted to talk about is plantar fasciitis.
Yes.
And so plantar fasciitis, they see a lot of patients coming in with foot pain or sole pain. Let's talk a little bit about that. Why does it happen? And what? How do you make that diagnosis? And what should people be looking out for?
Yeah, so it's the cause is very similar to the one in the back of the heel. It's all from just everything being, that calf muscle being tight, the Achilles then being tight, and then the fibers underneath the foot then pulling. But it's triggered mostly by some change in activity. Either you might have gained some weight, so the amount of weight that you were putting at the bottom of the foot, the plantar fascia, by the way, is the band of tissue that kind of forms the arch under the foot, just so you guys are aware. So
it's almost like a piece of saran wrap, if you will, that rests over the bottom of your foot, just keeping everything together.
Right. So when you step, it extends, so it attaches at the bottom of the heel, and when you step down, it extends and it's pulling at the bone. So now if you added 30 pounds onto what was there, now it's pulling even more. Or if you had a twisting injury, it could have caused that area to be inflamed. So there's multiple reasons why it could flare up, but the goal is to then reduce that inflammatory process, work on the stretching, get everything nice and loose, and then you want to make sure you're supported. That we're going back to the insoles. Make sure you have insoles in your shoes. Keep that arch, that tendon supported, that plantar fascia supported at all times, so that you reduce that excessive pulling.
And what about some of the new treatment modalities that are coming out in terms of ultrasound therapy, also PRP, and it's a lot of talk about platelet-rich plasma, and even stem cells.
Yes.
Do you have any experience with that?
Yes.
And sort of what are some of your thoughts on some of these new treatment modalities that are now available? And these are available right here at home.
Right here at Family Practice, Family Medicine Center.
Yes.
Yeah. So all of those treatments that Dr. Case just listed are classified under regenerative medicine. And what does that mean? That means that we are trying to get the body itself to repair itself. So you want to create like signaling markers so that the body then, because sometimes the body gets in this chronic phase and it's just in a constant cycle of just inflammation and not truly handling. The body is a wonderful being. It's good. It's very good at repairing itself. So sometimes you just have to do a little signaling to get it to remember, oh, hey, you're supposed to be making sure this functions well. And that's where PRP comes into play. That is your own blood. All it is you're taking your own blood, we're centrifuging it down, and we're getting the good cells that work as signaling markers to then trigger your body to do what it needs to do. So that's PRP. Then you have stem cells that either come from umbilical cord, placenta. These are from donors that have agreed. They're sterilized. And then you can inject those right into the area. And again, it does the same thing where it signals your body to repair what's happening.
And this is not hokey-pokey medicine.
No.
This is real, genuine, studied medicine that there is evidence associated with being able to provide patients with these treatment modalities.
Yep, and this is what all your athletes are doing.
Absolutely.
To help aid in their recoveries and their rehabilitation, because they put a lot of strain on their joints, their feet, their ankles, their knees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've had the opportunity to really cover a wide gamut of various conditions that affect the foot and the ankle. And as we get ready to sort of begin to wrap things up here, I think there are some big take-home messages, and one of those is about prevention. So that we want to be making sure that we are looking after our feet. We're seeing our healthcare providers and our podiatrists, which is a part of the healthcare team. And just to remind people that, you know, podiatry is a specialty area of medicine that is able to address any issues associated with the foot and ankle. And Dr. Knowles Adderley is a podiatrist, but also has a surgical specialty where she is able to provide surgical techniques for the management of foot and ankle pain or injuries that you may have. And so this is important. Prevention is the key. And of course, the other part is early recognition.
Yes, that is super important. So you just want to make sure you're always taking note of what's happening. Just be in tune with your body in general. But don't forget the feet. You know, sometimes we're very in tune and we just in tune straight down to the knees, and we forget the foot and ankle. But that's what carries you around.
Yes, daily inspection of those feet.
Yes.
Making sure that you're getting the right footwear and making sure that you're reinvesting in footwear.
Do you know what? That's important. Yeah, we missed that part. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can get a nice pair of athletic sneakers and you're doing your exercises. And I see a lot of my retired patients, they're walking 1 hour and 45 minutes every day. I'm like, let me see your shoes, and the shoes almost have a hole burnt in the sole of it. So that's no longer supporting you. So you want to change your shoes every 300 to 400 miles, or every 6 months, whichever one comes sooner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so when you're looking at the shoe for a person who may be interested in having a look at the shoe, and the use of the shoe and the wearing of the shoe, what are some of the things that they should be looking for that may indicate, hey, look, this is not a normal wearing of the shoe, that then this is something that you actually want to go and see your podiatrist about?
Exactly. You want to, if the wearing down of your shoe is not like evenly distributed, then you probably really do need to be in some custom orthotics. Because if, for example, you wear down mostly on the outside, then that's telling me that your ankles are in a position where you run the risk of developing or having an ankle sprain, just because you're wearing down more on the outside. It's telling me that we call it supinating, where you're turning in. Sometimes you could wear down mostly on the inside, and that's pronation. And that can put a lot of strain on the tendon on the inside, which we didn't touch on today. But that's another secondary to the Achilles. That's one of the major tendons in the foot and ankle. So the one on the inside of your ankle, that's a very important tendon. So if you're wearing down your tennis shoe on the inside of your shoes, is that the right way I'm saying? On the outside versus the inside?
Yeah,
I don't mean
inside.
Like inside your shoe, no, but like at the bottom.
The inner aspect.
Then that puts strain at the ankle at that area on the inner side.
Yeah. And your shoes, seeing how they're worn down. The other thing that comes to mind is, you know, the feet are connected to your entire body. Mm-hmm. And if there are issues that are going on with your feet and your ankle, they can actually manifest of your body, such as your knees, your hips, your lower back. So why does that happen? Why do you see that transfer of pain or discomfort into other joints?
The body does a wonderful job at just compensating. So if something is breaking down in one area, they're going to figure out a way to still have you moving. So it's going to put strain in a different area. So if the ankles aren't working properly, then the knees have to take the brunt. Or if the knees aren't working or aren't doing what they're supposed to do, then the ankle, you know, then takes the brunt of it, and vice versa. Sometimes lower back pain can cause some nerve impingement, and that's just radiating down, causing a lot of pain to your entire legs. And that's, you know, that's what we call sciatica.
Right.
So the whole thing is related. So you just want to make sure everything is supported. But from the ground up, you want to make sure you're in good shoes, you're supporting your foot, you're supporting your ankles, and hopefully that takes off tension off of your knees and hips.
Yes. And recognizing that all of those joints are so interconnected. And if you have a primary problem affecting your ankle and your feet, that can affect other parts of your body as well.
Exactly.
Because of that interlinking between all of those. So in terms of access to your services, how can people get access to you, and how do they go about setting up an appointment to see you?
Yes, I'm at multiple locations. You can find me at the Family Medicine Center. I'm there every Tuesday. And I'm also at Oak Tree Medical Center in Palmdale for those in the East, and as well as Doctors Hospital in Palmdale as well. And that's on Wednesdays.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And in terms of setting up appointments, they can just call the facilities and set up an appointment for you to be able to be seen. And they'll have an assessment done, and then be able to take next steps and get whatever imaging that may be necessary or tests that may be necessary.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you just make the phone call at whichever facility is best for you, then they will get you all set up to see me, and we'll go and do a full workup and decide on what's needed.
So for those of you that are listening, please do not suffer in silence. There is no need to do so. There is competent, capable help right here in the Bahamas with our teams of physicians that we have available that you have access to. And in addition to that, you do not need to suffer. Prevention is the key. for those of you that are able to, make sure that you get good, healthy footwear. You're examining your feet. You're looking after your underlying chronic medical conditions to prevent long-term health complications. And if there's one message that we want you to take away from tonight's session, is about prevention, looking after your health and well-being. So some final thoughts, Dr. Knowles Adderley, before we finish up.
Yeah, just to piggyback on what you just said, prevention, that is, it's sometimes people come in, well, nothing's really wrong. I was just told to just get an evaluation, and that is perfect. I would love to have a baseline so that we know that if there is any changes, I would have already seen you. I would know what your normal is, and we can then move forward to quickly address what might be the issue at a later, you know, date, God forbid.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to thank you so much for joining us this evening, and it has been wonderful being your host for tonight. Thank you to Dr. Gregory Pinto, Urology Speaks. We look forward to having you next week. A special thanks to our special guest in the house, Dr. Knowles Adderley, for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a blessed evening, everyone.
Get some help from the urologist.
You will find he'll help you solve your problems on 96.9.